Mr. Jensen, will you lead us in the flag salute?
The United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I move to approve the agenda.
I'll second that.
Okay, the agenda has been moved and approved and seconded. Is there any... Okay, seeing none, we'll move on. It is time now for persons to be heard on non-agenda items. Madam Clerk, can you read the rules for non-agenda items, persons to be heard?
Public comment pertaining to education on non-agenda items is limited to 3 minutes per person per meeting. There will be up to 1 hour for persons to be heard. Public comment on agenda items will be taken at the time the item is considered. This is your opportunity to be heard, and the board will not respond to your comments. As per board policy 1312, individuals testifying may not discuss complaints against individual employees. Under the agenda items, persons to be heard, the following guidelines apply. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-aged children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove the disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. Maximum of 1 hour per meeting. We have our first half hour beginning now. And there, no one has signed up on the sign-in sheet. Is there anyone who wishes to speak?
Seeing no speakers, we will move on to our next item, and that is Borough and City Reports. I see the Wasilla City Manager here, if you'd like to come forward.
My name is Bert Cottle, City of Wasilla. First of all, I want to thank whoever's responsible for getting our name plaques. Now we feel like we're wanted. That's kind of nice. I have three things, Madam President. First one is... SART, which is Sexual Assault Response Teams, the request letters for funding has went to the Mat-Su Borough and to the governor's office. I hand-delivered both. And we're hoping by the end of session that the pre-money for the START funds for the SART, so we have a sexual assault response team here in the valley without having to go to Anchorage, will be funded. Second, just a real quick on a library update. The sign's up on the corner of Cruzy and Swanson. If anybody would like to go by and see the nice sign we put up that said the home of the future library. So that's, we're one step closer. We'll have a vote by the people coming up here within the next 90 days on the funding mechanism. So we're moving on along with that. And the final item I have is a homeless count. On January 30th at the Menard Center, we'll do a homeless count. This makes the third year of doing it out there. This is open for teenagers as well as adults to come out if they need assistance as far as food, clothing, IDs, things of that nature. And that's from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on the 30th of this month. Thank you.
Thank you. Palmer, City Manager.
Thank you, Madam President, members of the board, Superintendent Paramo. Not a whole lot to report. We have adopted a budget. The city of Palmer's on a calendar fiscal year, so it's pretty much of a maintenance budget. We did have to increase some funding for volunteer firefighters to kind of keep up with the increases that the borough gave, so we wouldn't lose our excellent firefighters, who unfortunately have had some duty here lately with the fire up near Cedar Hills and the fire earlier this year of the historic property downtown. Pretty much had to increase a few other fees that have been passed on to us from the borough. Probably the big thing that's gone on with the city of Palmer is the starting January 2nd was the beginning of the voter initiative that banned smoking in public areas, businesses around the city of Palmer. So that's gone pretty smoothly, I think. And I think tomorrow, relating to that, there's a cash mob event that's being scheduled for the Palmer Bar. And this is something they're going to start, I think, well, it's on a Thursday. I don't know, maybe it's third Thursday or second Thursday of every month. They're going to try and highlight some businesses. The other thing that the city of Palmer, in conjunction with the downtown merchants, has started is actively setting aside second Saturday's events in the city of Palmer to try to get people to come to Palmer to do shopping and have some art walks and some things like that. So keep an eye out for those types of announcements. But anyway, thank you very much for your attention this evening. Any questions? Thank you.
Okay, seeing no other city officials, we will move on to item 5, which is an administrative report for Mukunda Cottrell and Company Annual Financial Statement Report.
Thank you, Madam President. We did just receive word from Mr. Campbell, who is the chief auditor that you're familiar with year to year. He is works for, of course, the borough, and we're a subsidiary of the borough, and so he does our auditing, and he let us know that the snow is causing him trouble getting out. So we are quite familiar with it. We have the presentation, so our chief business officer, Mr. Luke Fulp, will present this and questions, and of course, Mr. Campbell will be here later in the meeting that if there's any questions in regard to this. But I'm going to share a little bit for the end that you will find a very clean audit. Oh, he's here. Just in time. The man of the hour. Here he comes in. It's all set for you.
Hi there. Sorry about that. Traffic is horrible. So, okay. We're cute, huh?
Yes. Okay. I just introduced Luke to present your presentation, but it's all yours now. What? So do you want to take a breath?
No, I'm good. So, thank you, though. All right, thank you. My name is Eric Campbell. I'm the partner in charge of the audit for the Mattoon Borough School District with Mukunda Cottrell & Company. We're a Alaskan-based CPA firm in Anchorage. We did the audit for June 30, 2012 of the financial statements. The school district received unqualified opinion on the financial statements, internal controls, and another unqualified opinion on your internal controls on compliance under governmental accounting standards, an unqualified opinion on compliance with federal, thank you. An unqualified opinion in compliance with federal and state grant requirements. So clean, unqualified opinions throughout. So very good. Let's see. We have a little presentation up here. We have some graphs with a little bit of trend data, and then some of the key financial statements that I think are important to, you know, for the board and, you know, members of the public management to focus on. And then I'm assuming everybody has the a set of the financial statements. And there's a lot of information in there. If you haven't read everything, I would at least recommend that you read the letter of transmittal and the statistical section. I think those two little sections describe everything sort of that happened within the whole district very well. So, all right. So now looking at the slides. Okay, some general basic information. You know, as you can see, from 1999 through 2012, the population of the borough has went from 55 million to 91.7 million. Thousand people. So, yes, thousand. And thousands. Thank you. Yeah, I know. So, school enrollment over that time from 12.7 thousand to 17.3 thousand. So a 36% increase in students throughout that time. Probably one of the only districts throughout the state where you actually see that that incline. A lot of the other districts, it went down, and they're starting to kind of creep up a little bit. But so you're blessed a little. I mean, a lot of challenges come with it, but also at least a little bit of money comes with it too, to help. You are the largest employer in the borough. School employees this year, 1,686 school employees compared to 1,500. These are full-time equivalents, full-time equivalent employees. Average teacher salary this year, $64,300, up from $63,600. Total revenues this year, $257 million. So in 2002, you were at $118 million, up to $257 million. That's a 117% increase since 2002. So in 11 years, you have a 117% increase over 2002. Expenditures from $116,000. To $226,000, a 95% increase since 2002. Total expenditures per student, $14,685. You can see how it's steadily increasing over the years. It's actually a 65% increase over 2002. Yeah, that one's not very useful. General fund revenues. I skipped by one. Oh, you're looking on the screen too. Okay. General fund revenues from 97 million to 222 million. 128% increase. General fund expenses from 94 million to 214 million. That's a 128% increase since 2002. Instructional expenditures to non-instructional, 78% instructional. The state mandates that you spend at least 70% on instruction, so that requirement has been exceeded. Workers' comp claims. Since 2002, the average workers' comp claims is 1,012,000 a year in workers' comp claims. This year is $917,000. It's kind of all over the board there, you know, up and down. But general fund balance, in accordance with Alaska Statute 14.17505. This is what we used to refer to as unreserved fund balance. You know, some of the terminology has changed, but the state of Alaska only allows you to keep up to 10% of an unreserved fund balance, and yeah, so in accordance with those provisions, your fund balance is $1.7 million. It's actually $1.7 million in 2012, unreserved fund balance. Borough appropriations, $48 million. $48,000. Borough appropriations per student, $2,772.
2003, it was 2,241. Appropriation lapse to the borough, $298,000 this year. Student transportation. Revenues actually exceeded the expenses this year. First time in 4 years that's happened. The state had a special appropriation this year for student transportation that helped cover those expenses. Yeah, I know. Yeah, actually, the whole state owes you a debt of gratitude because everybody in the state got that, basically because of you guys. So.
I have a question.
Sorry?
Go back to the transportation revenue and expenditures. So the money that the revenue. The money that was not spent, is that money that will be used in the upcoming year?
Eric, could you repeat that? There's a little bit of a delay in the feedback, and so it doesn't come over very loudly. If you could just speak up, maybe.
Is the money that has not been spent on transportation, can that money be used in the upcoming school year on transportation?
Red button? You good? Yeah. That money becomes unrestricted once the district receives it, so it can be spent as you see fit. Transportation expense per student up to $812 per student. That's taken all the expenses by all the students. You know, I mean, some of your kids, some of your students are not taking transportation, you know, but... Food service, that, you know, revenue never covers expenses. You're always subsidizing food service. And, again, you know, your expenses were a little over $6 million and your revenues were, you know, $5,700,000, I believe. So you're a couple hundred thousand subsidy to food service there. And that's statewide. That's statewide, pretty much. Federal and state single audit. $8.6 million of federal funding, $185 million of state funding, and as I stated before, you know, you had an unqualified opinion across the board, so there were no reportable conditions, no question cost, you know, an unqualified opinion on compliance, so clean opinions again throughout. And this is your opinion, third paragraph there, you can... See where it says you receive your financial statements are fairly presented in all material respects. So that's what the clean opinion looks like. Exhibit A1, this is right from your financial statements. You can see you have $28,378,000 of assets. This is entity-wide, $13 million liabilities, net assets of $15.3 million. This includes capital assets and long-term liabilities. The next schedule here, this is more on your governmental budgetary basis of accounting, and you know, it excludes capital assets and long-term liabilities. So you can see the far right column there, $26.3 million of assets, $12,151,000 of liabilities. So your total fund balance is $14,193,000 across all funds. In a general fund, you know, the most important fund, $10.9 million in assets, $6.6 million in liabilities, $4.3 million of fund balance. In capital projects, you have $8 million for your future projects. That'll get spent pretty quick with all the projects you have going on. And then your non-major funds, you have $1.8 million of fund balance. 1.2 of that is in student transportation, 540,000 is in food service, and 99,000 was your fire proceeds for, what was it, Sioux Valley? Sioux Valley Fire? Damage proceeds. Did I skip one? Skip one. Exhibit C3 of your financial statements is your revenues and expenses. Total revenues, far right column, $257 million of revenues, $254 million of expenses, $2.7 million of revenues over expenses. You had $167,000 transferred over to the health insurance fund, so your net change in fund balance, your increase in fund balance was $2.5 million for the year. Of that, $1.4 million was an increase in the general fund, $773,000 in capital improvement projects, and $332,000 in mostly student transportation. Capital projects, the middle column there, you spent $5.4 million of your own money on capital improvement projects this year. This is your enterprise funds and your health insurance fund, health insurance and workers' comp fund. The right-hand column there, internal service fund, is workers' comp and health insurance. You have $1.1 million in assets, $1 million in liabilities, and $167,000 in net assets. That $167,000 is what you put aside to fund the health insurance fund for future health insurance. Exhibit D2, your internal service fund. This is basically the revenues expenses are your workers' comp. $1.389 million of revenue are transfers to workers' comp to cover your workers' comp expense. Your workers' comp expenses were $1,389,000. And the transfer in, that again, that was to your health insurance reserve fund. So that's sort of the big picture of the financial year. Any questions or?
Go ahead, Ms. Paramo.
I do have a question. You had mentioned about 100% increase over the, what is it, 12 years, 13
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
And in about 6 years ago, the indebtedness for PERS and TERS was figured out and placed in accounts at local school districts differently. And Matt Sue's accounts for about $40 million that is provided in revenue and expenditure just as a line item, so it's money we don't really see. Is that included
yeah.
in that 100% so that it's... Because I'm not so sure that, is that, because then that would be a little bit different, because it's not money that's actually going to the students and the school district functions. It's really the state articulating how much the debt is per district for past workers.
Yeah, so. You're talking about the in-kind, the on-behalf payments from from the state.
I was just wondering if that was part of the 100% increase, because it changed in about 2006, the manner in which they demonstrated as revenue.
In the revenue, I believe it is excluded in here. If it was included, it's closer to a 97% increase. The expense one, I have it excluded. And with the expenses, there's a 95% increase.
Okay.
So the revenue is pretty much proportional. So, it's a little above 100% with on behalf in there. It's a little less than 100% with mm-hmm. on behalf taken out.
Great.
So,
thanks.
You bet.
Ms. Rutherford?
This is more of a personal preference. Yeah, some people are picture people and some people are numbers people. Being a numbers person, I like those percentages that you mentioned on a few of those. I did a few of those calculations myself. It would be really helpful to have, the more comparisons I can make, the more it means to me, to have percentage increase on a lot of these things. For instance, that 100% increase, you know, with any odd anomalies noted that you mentioned there, the borough student appropriation is a tiny little as a percentage increase over the last 10 years. You know, those different comparisons that we can make are really helpful. Just a personal preference in how it's laid out.
Yeah. That would be pretty easy to do. I guess if I were to do that, would you want comparison, when I was doing a 95% increase in expenses, I was doing from 2002 to 2012. Would you want from 2002 to 2003, then the difference from 2003 to 2004?
No, like
the baseline
a 10-year period for each category, I think. So the long-term view,
so the baseline,
yeah.
Okay. Piece of cake.
I can actually do that and send it to Luke if you want, and he can distribute it.
That would be good. Thank you. Thank
no
you.
Problem.
Eric, do you have a question for us?
No, it's all good. Thank you.
It's frozen. I'm sorry. All right. Thank you, Eric. With that, thank you for your presentation.
Okay.
And we will move on to the next superintendent update. Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Madam President. We do have four items in addition to the budget update and bond project update that remain so that we keep those in the forefront. I did want to let the board know and our greater community, just thanks again for the past bond. There was a voter-approved bond in 2008 to improve the safety and security of our schools. And with the tragedy that happened a little over a month ago now, just really need to give thanks where it rests really with our community and our safety of our children. And I just wanted to update the board that $19 million was just recently completed, and it does provide security cameras in every one of our schools, including charter schools, school buildings for which we don't own, the borough doesn't own. It did include the security in those buildings, updated locks and electronic access points, and then lockdown and panic buttons, which are buttons and access for someone to immediately have emergency services called immediately, as well as doors release and automatically lock. And those were some interests in our community about what do we have in our schools. We are doing an entire complete assessment of all of our buildings with questionnaires to our staffs. Please know that all of our high schools do have safety, or five large high school safety coordinators. We most recently have worked with principals to update their incident command system certificates. We have updated all of the incident command programs and packets for our schools to have them updated. In addition, later this month, or rather later in February, the Matsubara School District is partnering with the City of Palmer, the Borough, the Troopers, as well as the cities of Wasilla and Houston to come together and really discuss first response, share what we have found in our full assessment of buildings, to kind of refresh the locations of buildings, the layout of buildings, and test all of our electronic systems in conjunction with our first responders. And so it's in our thoughts, it's in our actions, and this is something that we take care of every day, but we just wanted to be sure that we follow through with the expectation of our community and the board to keep students safe here in Matsu schools. Following our meeting with our local emergency providers, we look to have community input in regards to parents' concerns and student concerns as well. And so this is an ongoing process. It's a very strategic and cogent process that we've engaged in. And I just want to let you know that as a district, we're doing our best in this category as we can. And going to the experts when we need that assistance. All right. And so if there's any questions, we can certainly answer any, but it is an ongoing process, and we'll keep the board and our community updated. You may have noticed we had a couple of Spectrum articles, one in December and one in just recently, I believe Monday, in the Frontiersman to communicate with our stakeholders out in our community. We've pushed that also out to parents of schools through school newsletters. In addition, it's posted on our website. So we'll do our best in those categories. For the budget update, we want to, in addition to your clean audit from FY12, we also have a budget update. Previously in December, when we had our board meeting, we reported where the budget was at that point in time. That was prior to the governor's budget being presented. And, of course, our legislator is in session as of yesterday, and there's several education bills that have been presented. Mr. Fulp has updated our information, and there's good news in that what we presented was the worst case scenario, and we've already cut our deficit in half by doing an internal audit, if you will, employee to employee, to really target specifically what we would need for benefits and salary reductions. Now that half of the year is over in our Munis program, we were able to, so while everyone else was off on vacation, they were working hard here, getting the job done. So we'll go ahead and review that. The first thing in the governor's budget that we'd like you to see is that the education funding, there isn't an increase to the BSA that the governor proposes. Of course, there are several discussions, if you've followed the news, in regard to that. So the base student allocation, which is what BSA stands for, is at $5,680. And you can see that the last time that was increased with that forward funding of $100, $100, $100 was in FY 11. And in addition, though, this is something that we've always had to wait for. It kind of came at the 11th hour. The governor did put in the $25 million for energy relief, and it is dispersed by student enrollment. So Matt Sue is slated to receive $2,864,000. In addition, some interesting aspects of the governor's budget that Matt Sue will be able to benefit is called the JAG program, which is Jobs for Alaska's Graduates, and it retains the goal of 90% of graduation by 2020. In that, there's 800,000 statewide for 8 graduation specialists, and we received a call from the commissioner saying we want to give those to Matt Sue in demonstration of just taking care of business. So Matt Sue will receive one FTE in that program that are only statewide. In addition, in distance learning, there's almost $4 million presented to AASB for digital devices. This will be dispersed to school districts over the next few years, actually, for devices. And so school districts are in different places right now in regard to whether they need E-rate money, whether they need the money for the data to put in fiber, things like that. But this money is specifically for devices. So our share and our, if we, there is an in-kind share, and this will just benefit us with putting devices in our students' hands, whether they be iPads, computers, or other smart devices. Okay, and with that, I'm going to have Luke just share with you the picture of the previously presented budget deficit, which is no more, and so that we can, and that's just for comparability purposes so that you know where it is today. This conversation, and you'll, as I said before, you'll see this budget on here over and over and over again every month, and really it goes to the end of the session, and it's really not over there because that's when our state provides their explanation and their final, I guess, numbers on the state portion of our monies here in Matsu, which is approximately 3/4 of the money we receive. About 20%, close to 22%, comes from our local government. And so last year we found that out in May because it was in the manager's budget, but we can push it to June. So, you know, that's still out there, just to let everyone know. But we'll do our best to continue to keep folks updated. And with that, Mr. Fulp.
Thank you, Dr. Paramo. President Pauger, members of the board, it's my pleasure to present to you tonight. One of the things that I did want to start with was just a reference of the presentation. Thank you, Eric, by the way, for showing up. I wasn't necessarily fully prepared to give that presentation. But in that audit presentation, he did mention revenues increased by over 100% in a 10-year time span. I want to temper that with the enrollment increased by 5,000 ADM during that same time period, so that impacts the amount of revenue we would receive as a district. In addition to that, taking the enrollment out of the picture, there was a slide presented on total expenditures per student, and that slide increased by 60% over that same time period, yet that slide did have on behalf built into it. So there's some different factors at play here. The other thing that occurred during the last 10 years is House Bill 273, which we just mentioned. Those were a lot of built-in increases to the state foundation formula that were unprecedented and made up for a lot of funding that schools weren't receiving beforehand. So we'll get you the information on increases and make sure we notate any variance that may be caused by policy that was occurred during that time frame. As far as the budget projection for FY14, I just want to start with the presentation we made on December 5th. The star, the gold star, is going to be something that you see on any presentation we do that shows that it has been previously presented to the board. And in the future, I will also include a date for this projection. It was December 5th that the board saw this. Just a couple things, as Dr. Promo mentioned, this was presented as the worst-case scenario. When we presented this, we had three pages of assumptions built into this. Anytime you do an early projection or a financial forecast, you're going to have many assumptions built into that. We made sure that all of those were apparent to the board. One of the things that we did occur, though, is that our new budgeting module that we're using through Tyler Munis, our new ERP system, the first full year of use under this financial system and in attempting to use the budget module, we rolled all of our employees, over 2,000 employees, from one fiscal year to the next. And, of course, based on our salary schedules, those employees have regular movement, be it step movement or column movement, on those salary schedules. Those salary schedules are also built into our financial software. However, they're in the background database. So we used the tools we had available to us. We relied on the system. And what we received in terms of a number, and you'll see it on this projection, was an increase in salaries from $112 million to $118 million. So we had an overall increase of 5%. When we looked at that number after the system gave us that number, we thought that that was reasonable given the increases that are on the salary schedule and that number being reflected as the output. What came to light over the break, as Dr. Promo mentioned, is we conducted an extensive internal review of the data, given that we had half a year of data to look at, drilled down, looked at a granular level of the employee information, and saw that what Munis did and what the budget module did is it actually rolled every single employee forward. So that was something that we, of course, based on the salary schedules, not everyone's eligible for movement. So in conducting that review, we want to make sure that the new projection is out and available. Of course, when we had higher salaries, we also had higher benefits as a result for any of those mandatory benefits that are tied to the salaries as a percentage of the salary. And so really it inflated the budget quite a bit. So we on this particular date, December 5th, we presented a deficit, a structural deficit of $13.2 million. The good news is, one, we learned more about our financial system, and two, we have a much smaller deficit. So we want to make sure that the board and the public are aware that we're being transparent with our numbers and that everyone has the best information they can at a given time. So in any given time. With our new projection, you'll see several columns here. You'll see the actuals for FY12 in column A, the FY13 amended budget, that was the budget we began the year with. We did have changes throughout the summer after it was originally adopted. One of those changes that we talked about was the change to on behalf, and we brought that before the board as an amendment. So that's the amended budget, column B. Column C is then the budget based on the enrollment, the ADM. And you can see the enrollment at the top of this schedule. Across, it's the first row that is there as far as data goes. So based on the new enrollment of 17,258, we have a new budget based on the projection. This budget then is compared to our projection for FY14. So we're taking our current, comparing it to our projection of FY14. You see a column between the two projections or two amounts as the percent change between C and A, so that would be the percent change from the current year to from the prior year to the current year. And then we also have the projection in column E, and the final column is the percent change between the current year budget and the projected budget for next year. As you can see, we're going to focus on that last column. The percent change in salaries after we made the adjustments to all the job salary records in the financial system is that we have a smaller number of $114.5 million or 2.46%. So on the last slide, I referenced 5%. When not every employee moved forward on the salary schedule, we had 2.4%, 2.46% increase. So that's a better number, and it does have large implications, as you'll see. The second number that I want to draw your attention to is the new amount for benefits. The benefits changed on this one as well, based on being mandatory benefits tied to percentages. So in the prior slide, you can see that benefits were at 9.64%. Now they're at 5.16%. Again, so some savings there. Lastly, those were the two major changes to expenses, and I skipped over this, but I'm going to go back to it. Revenue for this budget projection changed in that we included the new number that we received as a result of the governor's budget proposal, and that is the 2,864,272 for energy relief. As you'll see, there's really no change between the current year energy relief and what the governor's proposed. You can see, and actually, it's a 0.91% difference, and so it's really a push when it comes to our budget for next year. But we did want to show this. And the other notable difference between what's currently in place in terms of funding and what we're anticipating for FY14 is that we've taken, we have $142 million in state foundation, and our projection includes $139.5 million in state funding. A large part of that has to do with the way we are budgeting our intensive needs students. This was an assumption that we presented on December 5th. I just want to reiterate how we're budgeting our projected enrollment, and that is 90% of intensive students. One is we don't know how many students will show up next year. That's one reason for the conservative projection. Another one is that we don't have a fund balance to rely on, and we are seeing the state tighten up their intensive student audit as a result of the number of students that are being reported statewide. So we want to make sure that we're not overstating revenue, that we're being conservative, given our just fiscal reality here. And so that's where we're at. And as you can see at the bottom, we've gone from a $13 million structural deficit to now what you'll see is a $5.9 million structural deficit. This is it's really great news for the district to be in this position as opposed to a $13 million deficit. It's really still a large deficit. I want to just stress that. You're looking at about 60 positions, and that's full-time equivalents. So that would be a major cut to the system, and it's still a very serious deficit, but it's much better than 13. So. Are there any questions on our new projection or overall questions on the budget?
Member Larson.
On the benefits, you said that Munis was moving everybody over on the steps, I assume. What do you do about education movement? How do you project that into this budget?
Through the president, we've taken actual percentages for movement from prior years and just projected that forward. So we took based on what's happened historically with how much movement we have on the salary schedule and what that amounts to in terms of a change in overall salary. That's what we utilize.
And what kind of, is that a consistent percentage from year to year, or did you take a 5-year and then average it, or what?
It's a fairly consistent number based on just the salary schedule as it is. Structurally, if the salary schedule is what it is, you can rely on that as a pretty accurate percentage.
So what is the percentage of employees that do move up educationally?
Through the president, I don't have that. Figure with
yeah,
me.
That's some information that we would have to be accurate. That's something that we could present next time in your board packet
in order to project your budget, you have to have that. So
and it's not in front of us, though. Yeah, it is accessible, but just not right now. Okay. Katie Gardner has those numbers.
Well, I see Katie's here, isn't she? Sorry, Katie.
Member Lacey?
Yes, through the President. This $800,000 from the governor on job coaches, is that what I'm getting? Are these one-year employees, or is the governor going to open up his piggy bank and give us $800,000 every year plus the benefits to keep these people on, or are they going to be a one-year employee and they're gone? How does that work?
Through the President, actually they will not be specifically Matt Sue Borough School District employees. They will be employed by a nonprofit organization and work with students in the Matt Sue Borough School District. The program is designed to follow kids most at risk in high school and then place them in jobs afterwards. So while we'll benefit with the assistance and the help, the employee will not be on our salary schedule.
Mr. Fulp, I had a question about the benefits here. I see that you have a percentage change on benefits. Did you base that on health benefits going up by a certain percent, or what did you base that on?
Yes, and with your question, it reminded me of one other thing that I forgot to mention in my presentation. Health benefits are projected at 6% increase over the current year. The other item that was throwing benefits off in the last projection versus this one is that Munis was not calculating the TERS-PERS benefit correctly, and so we've also fixed that. It's just a pretty large system, many, many employees, and we had to drill down into the data to find some of these anomalies and inconsistencies.
Member Larson?
Yeah, on your health benefits didn't change at all last year, but you're projecting a 6% this year. How can that happen when health care continues to go up every year?
Through the President, that's an excellent question. Really what occurred last year was in terms of a suppressed increase in health insurance, and I say suppressed in that we don't know what our annual renewal rate is going to be until mid to late April, and that's a result of NEA Trust publishing those numbers. They do have a reserve in which they can keep premiums the same, but a statewide trend and national trend is that health insurance premiums are increasing upwards of 10%. So this is a projection that we're using based on what we've seen in the past and what we know is occurring nationwide.
So one other follow-up question. This 6% in our budget is a matching 6%. So an employee's health benefit payout is 6% higher too. Is that correct?
That would be correct. So overall, you are looking at trend, which was 12%.
Mm-hmm. So it's a 50-50 split.
Yes. On any new increases, yes.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, we'll continue on, and the slideshow. Basically, the budget update, we just wanted to make you aware of this new projection and lead you into the budget calendar, the budget development calendar. So at this point, this is a preliminary calendar of the important dates that we're looking at over the next few months in order to set a budget, deliver a budget to the borough, make sure we're monitoring what's happening during the legislative session, and bring it back to the school board for a final approval and adoption. Okay, this is the first month here of January. Basically, the budget update today is what we have. We also have a budget survey that we're going to have online. It's not online currently. We'll make sure that it gets up there tomorrow. But that is something that we want community input and want to make sure folks understand the budget, the implications, and help us help, you know, if they need assistance in monitoring any public process and what the implications may be to our school district. We want to provide that information. So the first item is just a meeting on January 16th for this budget update and the survey. During February, we have another two more school board meetings. The first one would be a draft open house presentation to the school board. So you would be the school board would effectively be the first folks to see our open house presentation on the budget. And that following week, we would be going out to different school sites to make sure that the community had a chance to see that as well if they could not attend the school board meeting. and February 20th is another public hearing on the budget, as we'll continue to do throughout. March leads us into what we want to do effectively is have a presentation to the Borough Assembly prior to submitting the budget to them. So we're looking at two dates where we could have a budget presentation delivered to them, and that is March 5th or March 19th. We're currently working with the Borough to see if we can get on the agenda for either date as a non-action item. Other than that, it's going to be another budget review and input on a resolution and then initial budget approval, which would then be submitted to the borough on the 29th as far as a request for local funding. During April, that is when the borough will deliberate on the local appropriation and make sure they get back to the school district within 30 days per state statute for a funding amount. A minimum funding amount, and meanwhile, we will continue to have budget work session, budget updates at our meetings to make sure the board is kept abreast of any anything that comes out of the legislative session. On April 17th, we are hopeful that education will have been dealt with by that point, and we can provide at least a budget projection that includes a concrete numbers from the state. In May, the tentative borough funding date is May 1st, in which we'll receive that local appropriation number, hopefully sooner if possible. But again, we will have more budget meetings. May, we it's listed as tentative as far as the second school board meeting goes, but I believe that one will be removed as a result of graduations for that second week of May.
Actually, for clarity, there was a meeting scheduled for the 15th, which was canceled because those are evenings of graduations. If we were to need an extra reading, that is tentative, that we would place that in for an extra reading. You still have two board meetings in June. So currently, May 22nd is not scheduled. However, depending on the calendar and how information comes back from the state and our local governments, we may or may not need to place that on the calendar. And so we reserved it so that board members would know, so that we would have your two readings for the budget.
Thank you. And basically what we need are or what we have slated here are two different dates that the board can review the budget and make a final adoption on the budget, and we have three dates in which that can occur. So we're going to take two out of three, the first being, as Dr. Promo mentioned, the 22nd. The 5th will definitely be one of those dates, and if we do the May 22nd and the 5th, there will be no need to do the 19th. If we do the June 5th, then we will have June 19th as the adoption date. So this is the budget calendar as it stands. If there's any questions from the board, we'll take those then. Take those now.
Member Larson.
One question, but not on the calendar. Just one quick question. Do you know what the percentage, getting back to the health care benefits, to an employee benefits are going to cost them 6% more? Do you know approximately how much that is going to cost each employee yearly at 6%? Or can you get it for me later on, I suppose?
I can get it for you later on.
Yeah. And it's the same cost from a first-year student to a 10-year teacher that, first-year teacher to a 10-year teacher with a master's. It's the same cost, right?
Yeah, currently we have a composite rate for all of our health insurance premiums, so everyone pays the same premium level whether they have a family or they're self-insured at just one person. So you can see, sometimes you see a composite rate for everyone, and sometimes you see a rate that's tiered in structure. So you have family, spouse, children, and individual. But we, under NEA currently, we have a composite rate. I do not know exactly what 6% is going to mean for them based on that, but we'll get that to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I regret that the administrative or superintendent report was so lengthy today, but we haven't seen each other since December 5th, and quite a bit has happened, both at the governor's level at the state and locally. One last thing that I wanted to announce, because it's something good, is that Matsuburo School District is featured in our state's RTI conference, which occurs not this Friday, but on the 25th of January. I'd like to invite the board members. We'll send specific invitation, but it's held at the Denina Convention Center. It's called Building Student Success. And from 5 to 7 p.m., the keynote is about our story here in Matsu. So I had been requested to go. There's about 1,200 to 1,400 folks from across the state, 23 different districts, there to learn about RTI, and they're featuring our work with CORE and what we've done with reading and some other our PBIS. So I think it's a great time. This is work that the board has supported over the years, and I just will send out the specifics, but it's a good time to be in Matsu, and that our district was chosen as the feature, and I'll be speaking on it and getting all those 1,400 folks ready for their conference. So thank you.
I'm sorry, Member Rutherford.
May I ask where in the calendar the President and Superintendent's visit to Juneau fits? I'd forgotten. Wait, don't you already have those sort of set when you're...
Dr. Paramo?
Yes, through the President. We actually have quite a few visits. Excuse me. I will be heading to Juneau on the 29th and 30th of January. With superintendents, the five large school superintendents. And then in February, the first week of February is the AASB, where our president will be attending on the, I believe, the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th. And Mr. Luke Fulp will be attending then as well. I have another trip scheduled at the end of February, another trip at the beginning of March, and then if needed, like last year, because things are done at the 11th hour, we may be going down on April 15th.
Do you have a bond project update you want to move on to?
Oh, I regret. Yes, it's very brief. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. We just wanted to provide some highlights for you. The board is receiving a monthly activity report from the borough. We're very thankful for that report, as it keeps us updated on all the progress of the different bond projects. In addition to that, the project managers are meeting with our borough staff on a regular basis to review all the bond projects, the status, and coordinate times in which the facilities will need to be available to the borough. Basically, just want to point out a couple highlights. Valley Pathways, as we saw the 35% drawings, we're now just had a meeting on January 10th with the architects design team, Cool Carlson and Green. It was a schematic design confirmation meeting. We made design considerations with regard to data network support, looked at things like data drops versus wireless internet access connectivity throughout the facility, considered security within the facility's design, and other design modifications to ensure versatility in instructional spaces. The athletic complexes, this would be the turf fields for the major high schools. We're working with the borough to ensure that equitable distribution of resources are made available to all projects slated to receive turf fields and updated athletic complexes. And that involves coordination with the State Department of Education and Early Development to make sure that our project agreements can, we're coordinating funds between project agreements. And so there's just a little bit of administrative work that needs to occur to make sure that this happens. And then lastly, Matsu Day School, we're requesting an exception to allowable space of 1,500 square feet. And this would be an exception to that square footage threshold per student established by deed. But this space would allow a meeting space for other agencies to coordinate services with the students in that facility. This would be State of Alaska Health and Social Services, Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, and the Department of Health and Social Services. So we feel that our request will be looked upon favorably for this additional 1,500 square feet.
Mr. Larson.
The roofs are part of the bond project also from the borough, are they not?
Through the president, yes, they are.
Yeah, because I arrived today and saw a trailer out here and scaffolding. I assume we're working on the roof in the winter. That started in, when did that roof start? Sometime in the spring?
I believe that roof started before I arrived.
And
I arrived July 1st.
Is there any possible way we can find out why that roof project's still going on? And when's the conclusion to it?
I can answer that a little bit. Just as you recall, the weather, when it was raining, they couldn't do a lot of it, a lot of the rain. There was asbestos abatement in this building, which postponed it for over a month in the summer. And then with the winds, they could not put the materials up there because they would be a hazard to our schools across the road. And so primarily in between the red tape with the asbestos as well as the weather, we were put off. But interestingly enough, when it warmed up last week, they were out there working on it, and they stopped today in the snow, though.
In an additional comment, I was told by the project manager at the borough today that they will be completing work on the fascia at the end of next week. So hopefully weather cooperates and we can get this project done.
All right. Thank you for your presentation. Kendra McPhail, our Student Advisory Board representative. Go ahead.
I would like to mention that two of our executive board members in SAB have been appointed to the executive board of the Alaska Association of Student Government. Ariel Haas from Career Technical High School as parliamentarian, and Carly Williams from Palmer High School as the State Board of Education student rep, which is a big thing for two Region 3 reps from the same district to be on the executive board. We are furthering our resolutions on ATMs, and we are looking at ways to collaborate with the Anchorage School District Student Advisory Board. Palmer Junior Middle School had a parent info meeting, and Colony Middle School has a recycling program kicking off. Our next student advisory board meeting is February 6th at Wesela Middle School, starting at 9 a.m.
Thank you. That moves us on to the consent agenda.
I move the consent agenda, but I'd also like to pull something out. When do I pull that out? Do I do that now? Okay, I move the consent agenda.
All right.
I'll second the consent agenda, and those items are the minutes of December 5th, the permission to apply for Alaska National Rifle Association grant, the recommendation for certified new hire, and recommendation for rehire of retired teachers.
Now. Thank you. I'd like to pull B for just discussion. Thank you.
Oh, do we have a second on item B being pulled?
Yeah, I'll second it.
All right. So we have consent agenda minus item B. We're going to take a roll call vote for right now on that. So, okay. I'm sorry. So, Member Cordero. Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
All right, so that passes. Go ahead, Mr. Larson, with item B.
Yeah, I'd like to, is it on the floor? Or should I bring it up on the floor first? Okay. I'll bring it up, B13-046, permission to apply for Alaska National Rifle Association grant.
I'll second.
Second. The only reason I bring this up, I'd like to, I don't know who I would ask or where the information would come from. I assume from the Alaska National Rifle Association. I'd like to know if there's a sequence of of training from elementary school to middle school to high school, similar to like a hockey association has, where they start training children in elementary and work their way up through high school for a smooth transition. We're getting a lot of shooting sports in, which I'm 190% for, and I would like them to be sustained and not just come and go. So I was just wondering how we would find out if there is a systematic training course from elementary to high school. And so they're, you know, once they're trained in elementary, then they can get into the shooting sports. Just a question to throw out there.
I believe the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Hunter Training would be able to answer your question for you. And it would appear here from the bottom two pages, the bottom two sentences, that after, during completing this, our children will be able to get the basic firearms safety training, which will allow them to hunt in the state of Alaska.
We'll see if we can get some more information also to you in the Board Connect for this.
Thank you.
So is there objection to passing item B? Thank you. That passes also. I'd like to call a 5-minute recess.
Sorry, we're still on.
So we're back in session. We're moving on to action items. Can I have someone bring forward item A?
Right. I'll bring forward item A, 13-040, new course approvals, Chinese 1-4, and AP.
I'll second that.
Do we have anybody in the public who would like to speak on this? Do we have a staff report?
Madam President, we are prepared to answer any questions as we brought this on a non-agenda item in December. I believe that most of the questions were answered at that time, but we'd certainly entertain any if you had any.
Is there any discussion on this item, or did we complete that all in December? Okay, we're going to do a roll call. Member Cordero?
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
All right, that passes. Oh. I'm sorry, I am voting yes also. That passes unanimously.
I would like to move 13-052, fiscal year 12, comprehensive annual fiscal report acceptance.
Second.
Do we have any public comment on this? We've already had our staff report. Is there any discussion? Mr. Larson?
I had some discussion earlier on the items, but on the section that says financial forecast, I assume we're going to, are we going to get that? It's changed on this particular format. Are we going to, can we get something on the Board Connect that shows those changes on this forecast? Just to keep us in the loop. I know we're going to, but all right, thank you.
All right, yes, we can get that. Anyone else? Okay, remember, this is just accepting the report we just had. So, Member Cordero.
Um,
Just a clarification. Is this the report that we had, or is this for the audit report?
I'm sorry. This is the audit. This is the McCundra Cottrell audit that we passed beautifully. So we're just accepting this audit.
Yes.
Member Larson?
Yes.
Member Welton?
Yes.
Member Rutherford?
Yes.
Member Lacey?
Yes.
And I, too, vote yes. So this also is accepted unanimously.
I would like to move 13-5053, Academy Charter School Calendar Amendment.
I'll second that.
Thank you. Do we have any public comment on this? All right. Can we have a really quick report from administration on this for us?
Yes, Madam President. Academy Charter School requests that they make up their day next Tuesday. Therefore, we did a rush on placing this on the calendar. Their missed day of school for Monday's bad weather day, they'd like to make up. Please note that Academy Charter School already ends school earlier than the rest of the district and is on their own calendar. And so this will be done differently than the Mat-Su Borough School District calendar.
Member Larson.
Yes. Are we voting? I vote yes.
Okay. Is there any discussion among board members? Okay, now Member Larson.
Yes.
Member Welton.
Yes.
Member Rutherford.
Yes.
Member Lacey.
Yes.
Member Cordero. Yes. And I too vote yes, so this passes also. Okay, so we're moving on to non-action items. We have a request for another Mat-Su Central School new course approval. The approval would be World Fine Arts and Digital Publishing. Do we have any comments or questions from the board on this? Mr. Lacey.
Since I'm the school board's liaison officer for Mat-Su Central, I was at our last meeting. We talked about these two classes. The one class has to do with digital publishing. It's taught by Matt Welk, who's a very fine teacher. And the course basically teaches kids how to publish, but it teaches them the pitfalls having to deal with getting published on the web. It's a very important class. Both of these classes... The fine arts music class is exactly what that is. It's a music appreciation fine arts type class. It's already gone through their curriculum council and then through the council that we had, and then, of course, it's going to be at us. But these are two fine classes. And in keeping with their innovative approach to homeschooling education, this is a win-win.
All right. Any other discussion? Any other member questions? All right, since this is a non-action item, it will come up at our next school board meeting for action on that. So we're moving through the rest of this really quickly. We're now down to future items and future business. We have on January 22nd a special meeting for candidate interviews and appointments here at the Mat-Su Borough Central Office to discuss how this... how we plan on doing this. I've asked Katie Gardner to come up and do a presentation so we can talk about how this is all going to happen, especially for those candidates out there who are kind of concerned about what's going to be happening to them in the next week.
Good evening, school board members. I will walk you through what we are proposing that the board consider for the process to follow. And there we go. Basically, we want to make sure that this runs very smoothly, keep it succinct. We are very lucky that we have had really kind of an outpouring of community interest in the single vacancy, which is something that is delightful but a little bit unexpected. I believe at last count yesterday there are 10 candidates who have put in for the single opening. So we've put this together to try to facilitate the process that you'll go through to select among those 10 people. First, I just wanted to talk very briefly about the policy requirements. There are a couple that have already been completed, and they relate to the advertisement of the vacancy and the solicitation of applications. In addition, what we'll have to make sure that we complete and what's in progress is to provide candidates with information, announce their names, and accept public comment at a public meeting, which can happen on the 22nd, conduct an interview of the candidates in a public meeting, and then select the appointment through a majority vote. In considering the timeline that will need to be followed, the other policy requirement is that the board make their selection within 30 days of the actual vacancy. We are well within the timeline for doing that. The vacancy, I believe, was effective yesterday, was the last day that the member Gaddis was a school board member. So we have plenty of time and are on a very nice timeline so that you'll have someone who can be seated probably by your next meeting. But basically, the way that it would break down is that this evening in executive session, the board would come together to review the criteria which you'd like to use in making your selection and also determine the interview questions that you'll be posing to the candidates. We've reviewed the Open Meetings Act and reviewed with counsel that both of these items are appropriately discussed in executive session. Then tomorrow, what we would propose is that once the interview questions are determined, that we disseminate those questions to the 10 candidates for response in writing. We want to make sure that there's an opportunity for each of the candidates to make a presentation in a public meeting so that the public is very much a part of your process as they are filling a public role. This way, we can make sure that each candidate has a chance to respond. They can respond in writing. We can publish the responses so that people can see them. And then what they will do on the 22nd, which is the time scheduled to conduct the interviews, is they will make a presentation to the board of 5 to 7 minutes, and that'll be their opportunity to speak in front of the board, and you'll also have a time to get more in-depth information in the written responses. All of it open to the public, all of it with a component so the public can participate, or at least be present and listen. Then on the 22nd, the presentations will be concluded and the board will make a final decision. The candidate presentations, as I mentioned, what we're proposing is they take between 5 and 7 minutes. We wanted to make sure that there was enough time for them to make a statement, but at the same time that it was a manageable time since there are 10 individuals who will be presenting before the board. We would recommend that the order proceed in reverse alphabetical order on their last name. It's a very objective way to do it. People will know in advance the order that they'll go. Candidates will not be permitted to listen to the other respondents. We'll have a waiting area. They will come and wait. That way there's no advantage to someone based on the order in which they would be presenting to the board. We'd ask the candidates to arrive and on time so that they can wait and they would present in the order that we publish. After the 5 to 7 minute presentations, we will build in a 10-minute window so that if the board has a specific follow-up that's required based on the individual's presentation, you'll have time to do that. Given that all candidates will be here, if for some reason you feel that you have enough information after their presentation, we could proceed to the next individual. So,
just one quick question, and this might seem completely irrelevant or silly, but could you just check with the lawyer that by asking the candidates to wait outside and not listen is not against the Open Meetings Act?
We did discuss that today and discussed that it was appropriate. That way we make sure that every candidate has a fair and equal opportunity in front of the board. So that was something that we reviewed today as appropriate and certainly within the law.
Member Larson?
Can you go back to the last slide? Board will have 10 minutes for any follow-up questions. On the interviewing that I've done, it's always been set questions to ask each candidate. Is it all right with our attorney that we have such follow-up questions that may be different between each candidate?
Sure. It is all right. The process that you're going into is a little bit different. The body of law that governs the selection of a school board seat is a little bit different than hiring employees. But the same standards really apply, and it's a matter of making sure that you're not discriminatory in any way. So as long as your questions are related to the responses that they provide and simply a follow-up to something that they've said, and you're not giving an unfair advantage to one candidate over another, then yes, it's appropriate.
Are you, is there going to be a moderator such as yourself there to make sure if we do, you know, I'm not saying that would happen, but by accident we ask a question that may not be appropriate that we can be held in check?
That's something that the board could certainly decide. I'll be present on the 22nd and happy to fill that role if you'd like.
Member Welton.
This is all new because in the past we have never done it this way.
Correct.
How was this decided that we would do it this way?
Well, through the president, we solicited support from school board president Pauger, really because you're looking at a field of candidates that you've not had before. 10 participants is more than we've had in the time that I've been here, which I understand is not as long as some of you. And what we wanted to do was to develop a process that had public input, an ability for the public to hear all parts of it, and was a manageable amount of time so that the board could do it. When you're looking at a traditional interview process, where you've got at least, at a minimum, 30 minutes to an hour for every individual, you're talking about a significant amount of time. If we asked the board to go into the executive session to pare down the candidates, we felt that that might unnecessarily exclude members of the public from the process. So this was a way that we could make the time manageable and also allow for every candidate to have some part in the process and not to be taken out of the running before they even had an opportunity to really address the board.
Okay.
The policy also doesn't get so specific as to outline the method by which the selection will happen, which is something we've also talked about. If this turns out to be a process that the board likes working through, it might be something that you want to provide some additional detail in your policy to describe how it's done to eliminate questions in the future and also to make sure that candidates who are applying know the process that they're getting into from the start.
Okay. I just want to say there were 10 when I was appointed, and we had no idea what questions were being asked, and it was all done in a fairly short order, less than 3 hours, if I recall. So, just, you know.
Member Welton, in this also, we're talking about giving them questions to answer in writing. So we will have questions that they've answered in writing. We'll be able to publish that for the public also. It's a way to get a lot of information in a pretty short order, so our meeting is not quite lengthy.
So again, on the 16th, we're reviewing the process to be followed. The administration can take direction from the board. There's no formal action that's required this evening. None was noticed, so we're being consistent with what we can do under the Open Meetings Act. The executive session was noticed, and what we'll be doing in the executive session is finalizing the questions that will go out to the candidates, and then the rubric, which consists of the characteristics by which the board will be evaluating the candidates. On the 22nd, we'll go through the schedule will be for the board to attend at 5:30. You'll be able to receive the written responses. That will give you some time to review the written responses before the candidates come for their presentations. At that point, you can begin to complete your rubrics. Those will be the items that you'll do individually. And then at 6 o'clock, the candidates will report, and they will begin their presentations, and we'll start to go through that. Once all of the presentations are completed, the board will then be able to discuss and debate or deliberate. Again, that will be happening also in a public session. And finally, the board will take a vote. The final candidate selection, because there are 10 individuals, we've proposed a process by which there are a series of votes that narrow down the field. I believe Member Cordero has a question.
Yes, sorry.
Member Cordero.
What is the day that we get the actual questions from the candidates?
I'm sorry, did you say when will you get the actual questions from the candidates?
Answers from the candidates.
You will get the responses from the candidates not until Tuesday. We wanted to make sure that candidates had enough time to be thoughtful and thorough in their responses, since they won't get the questions until tomorrow at the earliest, and Monday is a holiday. We will have the questions returned and prepared for the board just before the meeting.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is, if we're not getting the answers before the meeting, how is the public going to be able to comment on that without really having a lot of notice or an opportunity to get them?
I anticipate that we'll be able to also post the responses midday on Tuesday. So you're right. It doesn't leave for a significant amount of time for individuals to review those responses, but we will get it out there as quickly as we can. We didn't want to require the responses come back on Friday because we didn't feel that it gave the candidates really enough time to go through the process of putting together a thorough response.
Thank you.
Member Larson?
So if we're going to post the responses at noon, why isn't the board going to get the responses before 5:30?
We will be emailing them to you as well, but I know that some of you will be at work and may not be able to review them until the meeting, so we wanted to make sure that we also built in time to review at the meeting. The voting basically is to happen with a series of votes. Because there are so many candidates, if everyone were to vote for one, it's unlikely that a single individual would have the support of the quorum of the board. So basically, we've to some extent modeled this after a process that the Anchorage School District uses for board vacancies, with some slight modifications. And basically, you'll start with a process where every board member has six individuals by which they can vote for. Any of the 10 who receive 4 votes, which would be a quorum of the board, they will move on to the second process. If after the first round no candidate is to receive more than 3 votes, then the matter would be open for nominations. We don't expect that to be the case, but that's what would happen if it did. For the second round, then, each board member would receive the ability to vote for a single individual. If there's one individual on the second round that receives the quorum support of the board and no others do, then that person could then be selected as the individual to fill the seat for the board. Otherwise, we will take the 2 top candidates. If there's a tie, all of the individuals participating in the tie would forward onto the third round, and again, the board would vote. Each would have a single vote, and we would hope at that point that an individual would be selected through a quorum of the board. If not, we could take a subsequent vote, but at that point, we'd basically revert back from the beginning and start with the candidate pool over again.
Are there any questions or concerns from the board? Okay, so, Mr. Larson.
The vote, is it open or is it a paper vote, or how's the vote taken?
We will be, I spoke with Earl earlier today, and we believe that we'll be able to use technology so it won't be a paper ballot. But they'll be compiled and then reported out on the candidates who received sufficient votes to move forward.
Are we going to be trained?
We'll go through training, but I assure you it will be quite simple.
Okay. So that's our meeting on January 22nd. Thank you, Katie. That's our meeting on January 22nd, and we will go into executive session later this evening to pose our questions, decide what questions we're going to ask, and also come up with a rubric for scoring our questions and the candidates. So the second meeting we have here is future items, future business, February 6th, regular school board meeting, and then February 20th, also a regular school board meeting. I would like to propose that when the weather is better, sometime in May, we maybe move some of our meetings to outlying schools that we haven't been to for a while. But for right now, we'll stay at our in-town meeting place. Is there any other future items, future business? Sarah?
The policy committee is scheduled to meet on the 23rd, and at our last meeting we set at 5 p.m. for the meeting at Mattsu Central School. At this time, you have one item for us, and I have not heard anything from anybody else as to whether there's any policies that were being brought forward.
Okay, the policy that I would like the committee to look at is Board Policy 9320. It is our meeting policy. Part of that meeting policy mentions teleconferencing, and it does say that when members attend via teleconferencing, all votes shall be taken by roll call. This is written into our board policy, but our board policy is kind of behind on technology, so I'd like the committee to look at this board policy and see if we want to change it, and if we do, how, and bring some recommendations to the school board on that policy. Does any other member of the board have any policies that they would like looked at by the committee? Mr. Lacey?
I'd like to go back to the meetings. Can we have a meeting at Glacier View, because we haven't had one out there in a while, and one at Sioux Valley?
Those both sound like good places. We haven't been to Glacier View. Last time we went up Talkeetna Way, we had it at the elementary school. So Sioux Valley sounds like a good idea. Any other suggestions? Any other place someone would like a meeting? Okay. Do we have any other future items, future business we'd like to talk about? Mr. Larson.
The 22nd on our meeting here on the candidate, I am privileged to be on the jury pool for the district federal court, and I'll be calling in Friday. And if I get selected to go in on jury duty, I have no idea how long that'll be, and I'll notify Dr. Promo on that issue, because I don't know how late they go or how their jury selection is. Thank you.
Member Cordero?
Yes, and I think a lot of the other board members have been getting requests too, have been getting a few phone calls and emails from parents and people in our community that want to have a conversation about the firearms in schools issue. I just bring it up as if it's something that the board wishes to discuss at a future meeting.
Dr. Prama?
Public comment. Remember, you're getting together with all of the committees and then public comment.
Mr. Cordero, I was reviewing some of our scheduled. We do have a plan for the safety. We're doing an internal audit now, working with our local agencies, and then wanting to have actually a very deliberate panel with school officials, community officials, our assembly members, things like that, where parents can pose that question. So we do have one planned. A gentleman that had some interest is here this evening, and I let him know, and we will keep him and others that have contacted us in the loop. And we're looking at that process just to coordinate schedules sometime in March, so that a full panel can be present when that discussion happens of both school board, local leaders, perhaps state leaders, in addition to first responders.
Thank you.
All right, that moves us down to our second persons to be heard on non-agenda items. I don't believe anybody's here who wasn't here earlier in the meeting where we heard the rules for persons to be heard. So we will just move forward with that. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to be heard by the school board? Okay, doesn't look like there is. So we'll move on to correspondence and board committee reports. Do we have any correspondence or committee reports? We, Mr. Larson.
I had one correspondence that came in via email and phone call about a distraught grandparent over a child in school, and I appreciate being able to forward it. I forwarded it to the superintendent's office, and then went through channels. I do appreciate that method of being able to refer those kind of cases back to the school district instead of having to deal with them on one-on-one. So it was a very interesting call. Being a grandparent myself, I can understand it, but I'm glad I was able to refer it to staff. Thank you.
Any other correspondence? I did receive an email from a member of our community with a proposal for safety at our local schools. I'm sure the rest of the school board members did receive that. We just want to let that individual know that we did read through it, and we are moving ahead with Dr. Paramo and looking at school safety. Thank you. All right, so that leaves comments from school board and administration. Mr. Cordero, do you have any comment?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I want to thank Earl and the administration and everyone that made it possible for me to see all of you and for you to hopefully see me. For this meeting. As you know, I am in Juneau. It hasn't stopped raining for almost 2 weeks, but I know that you guys had a terrible weather and very unsafe roads, and I want to thank everyone from the Matsu School District with the way that they communicated with parents and the community about the closure of our schools and the safety of our kids. Thank you.
We appreciate being able to see you too, Eric. You're way larger than the rest of us. at least on the screen, you're way larger than the rest of us. Member Larson, do you have any comments?
Yeah, I just want to congratulate the school district on an excellent budget review or audit that came out very positive to the district. It's good to see that we're able to see our budget and follow it. There may be some glitches along the way, I understand, but oftentimes they're taken care of. I appreciate that information immensely, and also, again, appreciate the information that we get on Board Connect and updated on all issues. It makes board meetings easier and shorter. Thank you.
Member Welton.
Yes, I attended the Justice Coalition this morning. We had Judge Vanessa White from Family Court come and talk to us about her ideas of the juvenile therapeutic court, which she wanted to bring into to view 5 years ago when she was appointed, and found that it was not going to happen. She's now requesting that the community organizations that are part of the Justice Coalition to get together and try to form a steering panel or committee that will work on the ideas that come from Reclaiming Your Future, which Anchorage has been using. It sounds really interesting, and it's a model for assessing and helping our youth who have problems and troubles and might be headed towards the juvenile justice system, and trying to work with therapy and other interventions. Also, we talked about the transportation issues in the borough. We talked about our homeless youth, and we talked a little bit about some of the just the concerns. Again, the January 30th Homeless Connect is at Menard Sports Center. And that will help people get, I guess you can get identification, you can get a haircut, you can get clothing, things like that. And so to be a part of that, you might want to volunteer or at least maybe show up to see what it's all about. And that's all I have right now.
Member Rutherford? Member Lacey?
Yes, thank you, Madam President. In my normal recognizing the employee, how many people in this room know who cleans this building? His name is Andrew, and he works right around this corner here. I just want to say that he's a hardworking guy. This building is always clean, and you can thank him for that. And he works hard at it. Thank you.
All right. I just wanted to say thank you to all of the employees of the school district. Kids came off of Christmas, winter break, came back to school, met happy teachers in the classroom, clean schools in good repair, and we really are grateful to all the employees who work so hard to make sure our students have the best education possible. So with that, Dr. Paramo.
I just like to, I'll ditto what you said and just say Happy New Year to everyone, and things are good. Cooking again in our district, and it's great to be a MATSU student and employee, and certainly I'm honored to be the superintendent. Thank you.
Kendra, do you have comments tonight? Okay. And so we need to have somebody send us into executive session.
I'd like to make a motion that we go into executive session.
Second.
Okay, the matters of the executive session, the matters of immediate knowledge, which would clearly have an adverse effect upon the finances of the government unit, subjects that tend to prejudice the reputation and character of any person, provided the person may request a public discussion, matters which by law, municipal charter, or ordinance are required to be confidential, matters of confidential legal counsel or pending litigation. In our executive session today, we're going to talk about candidate questions and procedures for filling the board vacancy. With us will be Dr. Paramo, Katie Gardner, and the board members. Thank you.